Welcome to the Little Victorian Boy podcast. I am storyteller Little Victorian Boy. The story you're about to hear was inspired by suggestions from my Patreon members. If you'd like to be a part of the Little Victorian Boy creative process, go to my Patreon. That's patreon.com/littlevictorianboy, and you can make suggestions for the next podcast, as well as get a secret bonus podcast. That's right, secret podcasts on the Patreon, one for every one that I post publicly. So if you'd like to hear more stories from me, go to my Patreon. That's patreon.com/littlevictorianboy. Throw any amount of money towards me at all. Some people throw $5. That's very generous. That's very generous of them. You could throw less or more and get access to those secret podcasts, as well as throw suggestions at me for the next round of podcasts. But this one is already done. It's already recorded, and I'm about to tell it to you now. I'm very excited. The story is called The Society of Culinary Mystics. Enjoy. The Society of Culinary Mystics is a secretive organization, and as a secretive organization, their activities are, well, very secretive. Most of what we know about them comes from the journals of a young, intrepid investigative journalist by the name of Elizabeth Carraway. Elizabeth dreamt of writing for the New York Times, but as a woman in the early 1900s, the opportunity to write for a major publication in this capacity was quite difficult. Though she was a skilled writer, she knew that in order to break through to the editors, she needed a piece no other writer had. A piece so juicy, her talents couldn't be ignored. So, in 1904, Elizabeth set out to infiltrate the Society of Culinary Mystics and write an exposé on their annual gathering, a party known as the Convocation. This story is a dramatic interpretation of her journals and notes, as her article was never published. Though some aspects have been added to fill in the gaps, we here at the Little Victorian Boy podcast have done our best to stay faithful to Elizabeth's journalistic standards. Infiltrating the Society of Culinary Mystics would not be an easy task. For one, no one knew who their members were, or even if the group existed. But Elizabeth caught word of a rumor circling through high society of a possible member. His name was William Cooper, a new money textiles baron with a love of exotic dining, travel, and hunting. The rumor of his membership to the society began because he once bragged about it while drunk in a men's club in Manhattan. Most thought his bragging was just bluster, a cocky upstart trying to win approval from old money families. But Elizabeth believed there might be some truth to the rumor. For one, Mr. Cooper never spoke of his involvement in the society again, and when pressed about it, he would quickly change the subject. There was a fear in him. Perhaps he crossed a line with those loose lips, and he dare not repeat the mistake. It was a long shot, but Elizabeth knew it was her only shot, so she began a correspondence with Mr. Cooper. She wrote under an assumed identity. As an adventure travel writer named Trenton Duval, she convinced Cooper that she was interested in writing a series of adventure books based on his travels, and would feature him as the main character. Appealing to Cooper's vanity was quite easy, as he was a particularly vain man, and the two wrote back and forth for over a year, Elizabeth slowly gaining Mr. Cooper's trust. She even sent him a rough draft of a first novel, depicting Mr. Cooper as a brave hero fighting off a deadly, poison dart-wielding Amazonian tribe that desperately wished to taste his flesh, as well as the flesh of his buxom blonde love interest, a character Elizabeth just made up. Mr. Cooper loved it. He loved it so much, in fact, that he invited Duval to join him on his next adventure. He was traveling to the Serengeti to hunt the nearly extinct dwarf rhinoceros. Elizabeth cut her hair, practiced deepening her voice, and wore a false mustache to play the role of Trenton Duval in person. She was worried Cooper would see through her disguise, but he didn't. He was thick-headed and lacked a keen sense of observation. Even if Cooper sensed something off about Duval, he wouldn't have addressed it for fear of potentially ruining his opportunity to be lionized in print. The two boarded a vessel and began their journey to the Serengeti. They spent evenings debating politics and business, Elizabeth always careful to let Cooper have the last word. They drank copious amounts of whiskey and raided the bodies of women they'd slept with. And after having a little too much whiskey on one night, they kissed a little. But you know, just how bros do, or whatever. They made it to Africa and traveled inland to begin their hunt. A local guide led them to where the last of the dwarf rhinos congregate, and Cooper shot a whole family of them. "What do you plan on doing with those?" asked Duval. Oh, the mother I'll have mounted in my trophy room, but the babies I'll take to town to trade.
Trade for what?
Oh, you'll see, said Cooper with a wink as he slung his still-smoking rifle over his shoulder. Elizabeth followed Cooper and the guide-slash-translator into town. They made their way to a market and found a stall adorned with hanging skins of all manner of creatures. An old woman carefully prodded at what looked like a liver in one corner, and a blind man sang a little song to himself in the other. The guide paid the blind man a stack of gold coins, and the blind man pulled a tapestry off the wall, revealing a hidden door. Cooper, Duval, and the guide went through the door, entering a small, smoke-filled room. At the center sat a naked man in front of a fire. He screamed something at them in a language neither Cooper nor Duval understood. What did he say? Asked Cooper.
Oh, he said you should have knocked first, said the translator, and the man put on a robe and invited the three to sit.
The guide communicated that they wished to trade the dead rhinos. The man inspected the rhinos, nodded, and then did something quite strange. He reached his hand into the fire. His hand disappeared into the flames, but the man made no indication that the fire was burning his skin. He reached into the fire as though he were searching for something. At one point, something pulled at the man's arm. He cursed and spat back at the fire, which released him. And he pulled out a little jar of pink jam and handed it to Cooper.
Yes, the society won't believe this, said Cooper under his breath while staring mesmerized at the jar. At that moment, the fire cracked loudly, and the formerly naked man bent down, cupping his ear to the flames. Then he looked at Duval right in the eyes.
Come here, Elizabeth, he said. Elizabeth froze. She'd been found out, but when she looked at Cooper and the guide, they were both transfixed on the jar of jam and paid no attention to her or the man by the fire. They cannot hear us, Elizabeth.
Come here.
Elizabeth walked over to the man. How do you know my name? She asked, but the man just smiled and said, listen, it has something to ask you. And he gestured towards the fire. Elizabeth bent down and listened to what the fire had to say, or whatever was inside the fire. Now, Elizabeth's writings were careful to omit what the fire asked her, but what we do know is her response.
Yes, she said,
and she reached her hand into the fire just as the formerly naked man had done and pulled out a little pouch. Elizabeth looked up and saw Cooper and the guide. They were staring at her.
Duval!
Hello, Duval, said Cooper. Come on now, I've got what I came for. Let's get out of this stink pit and go get something to drink.
Elizabeth, holding the pouch, looked down at the fire one last time, and then left with Cooper.
On their voyage back home, Elizabeth kept catching Cooper pulling the jar out of his pocket to inspect it in the light. He didn't discuss it in detail with her, but Cooper was not the type of man who could keep a secret. By their third night at sea, it was clear to Elizabeth that Cooper was ripe to tell her all about the jar, and perhaps the society as well. But first, he needed to be drunk. So Elizabeth fixed Cooper a number of cocktails, and the conversation went as it always did. Business, to politics, to women's bodies, to a little kissing, and when Cooper was good and drunk, Elizabeth went in for the kill.
Tell me, Coop, what is it that you got in that jar?
Oh, this? Oh, it's nothing, nothing.
You said the society wouldn't believe it.
What?
The society. When you got the jar, you said the society.
You wouldn't happen to be talking about the Society of Culinary Mystics, would you?
What? No, no.
There is no society. That's just a rumor.
Come on, Coop.
I know you too well. You're a member, aren't you?
Cooper remained silent.
You're a member, and that jar has something to do with it, doesn't it?
I shouldn't. Now, Coop, I have to tell you, these days, people go wild for anything occult. If you're a member, I could write about it in my next book. I would change the name of the society, of course, you know, to protect your anonymity, but I'm telling you, it would sell. Your adventure series would be read worldwide. Your name would be synonymous with rugged masculinity, wealth, power. It'd put Teddy to shame.
Cooper looked at the jar.
You'd call it something different?
Of course, Coop. You can trust me.
Duval placed his hand on Cooper's and gently squeezed it. Now tell me, what's this whole society about, anyhow?
Coop looked his friend Duval in the eye and began telling him all about the society. It's a social club made up of America's elite businessmen and politicians. They've been around for over 100 years, and membership gives you access to the hidden mechanisms of power, wealth, and influence. But the society only meets once a year. At the convocation.
It's a party. A dinner party, Cooper told Duval. Only it's not just a dinner party. It's a macabre dinner party. We wear masks and robes, and each member is required to bring a dish. A macabre dish. A dish of exotic danger, darkness, and mystery. Food that imbues power into those who consume it. We share in these forbidden delicacies and then conduct business, negotiate laws, and decide future leaders. Now tell me, Coop, how does one become a member? You're either born into it, being the son of a member, or you're invited by a sitting member, but in the latter case, you must bring a dish worthy of acceptance. If it's not macabre enough, you'll be killed. And that's how you got in. Yes. In the Amazon, I stumbled upon a hidden tribe. They had this sacred hallucinogenic flower that they turned into like a chutney, and when you ate it, it gave you a glimpse into the future. I tried to buy some of it from them, but they wouldn't sell it to me. So I came back with some mercenaries and, well, let's just say, I got the damn chutney. The society was impressed enough to let me join, but I'm still new money. They don't respect me, but this jam? Oh, they'll respect me after this. Cooper, bring me to the convocation. You? But you'll need to bring something. I have something, Cooper. Something of great value, trust me. Duval, I don't think... Trust me, Coop. Cooper looked at his friend Duval, then at the jam, and something deep inside him stirred. Perhaps it was the whiskey, but whatever it was telling him to trust Duval, to bring him to the convocation. So Cooper agreed, and on November 1st, he brought his friend Trenton Duval, the author, as a guest to the convocation. Just as he had said, everyone was given masks to wear, each resembling a skull of a different animal. Duval was given a buzzard skull and introduced to the group. "What is this?" said a man in a bear skull. "A new member? Cooper, you're already on thin ice, and now you bring some penniless author into our ranks." I know, but when you find out what I've brought, you'll be so pleased, you'll forget all about my past transgressions. And what about your little friend? Has he brought anything of value? Don't worry about me, said Duval. You won't be disappointed. The bear-masked man, whom Elizabeth suspected was a particular politician, whose name is now on plenty of bridges, streets, and schools, harumphed and joined the others around the dinner table. "Welcome to the 133rd Annual Convocation for the Society of Culinary Mystics," said a goat-masked man. "Gather round and reveal your items." A man in a wolf's mask pulled out a jar of honey with a human hand floating in it. "This, gentlemen, is the mellified hand of Pharaoh Amenhotep. A spoon of this honey will heal you of any ailment."
"Could it heal Brady's erectile dysfunction?" said one of the men, and the rest, save for Brady, laughed.
"Well, thank you, Coulson. Very macabre of you," said the goat man.
"I've got something even more macabre than that," chimed a fellow in a crow's mask, placing a basket of little eggs on the table.
"These are gnome eggs. I keep the little bastards locked in a cage in my closet, and they lay eggs once every 10 years. A taste of their yolk doubles your strength."
"So you're saying Brady will be almost as strong as my 12-year-old daughter," said a man in an owl mask, and they all laughed.
"Oh, knock it off," said Brady. "Now it's my turn.
I've brought you something particularly macabre, a treat so dark many shudder at the sight of it. I bring you black licorice."
"That's it? Black licorice? That's not macabre. Brady, you're lucky your great-great-grandfather founded this society," and the men began loudly arguing.
"Gentlemen," shouted Cooper,
"I don't mean to interrupt your bickering, but I have something that may interest you." Cooper pulled the jar from his robes. "I have brought you a jar of the devil's jam." The men fell silent. "Pulled from the fires of hell, they say a spoonful of this jam tastes like the sweet release of death itself, and after consuming it, you'll gain the devil's sight into the souls of man. With a glance, you'll know a man's fears, his desires, and if he's telling you the truth." The crowd clapped, impressed by the jam, but then Duval spoke up.
"Gentlemen, thank you for allowing me to join you this evening. I know that you do not take new applications for membership lightly. But if you like Cooper's jam, you'll want to hear what I have to say." The group's eyes fixed on Elizabeth, now exceptionally curious.
"I too have a gift from the devil. In fact, I spoke to him. And unfortunately, the jam Cooper brought is quite useless. Well, useless without its pairing. You see, in order to gain the devil's sight, the jam must be consumed properly. Paired with this." Duval pulled the pouch out of his robes. "The devil's whiskey." Cooper looked at his friend, shocked by the revelation. How had he not noticed this? "Well then," said the bear-masked man, "let's have a look." Duval pulled a bottle out of the pouch, but it was empty.
"What? Where's the liquor?" said Brady.
"I gave it away," said Duval. "All to my friend Cooper."
"You did?" smiled Cooper.
"Yes. I put it in his cocktails on our trip home. But like I said, the jam and whiskey must be consumed properly, and the devil explained to me how to do that. One must eat the jam spread upon the living flesh of a man who drank his whiskey. So, gentlemen, my contribution is standing here beside me. It's Cooper."
Cooper tried to run, but it was too late. The Society of Culinary Mystics grabbed him with hungry hands and flung him onto the table, stripping him of his robe. They held him down and spread the jam across his stomach, and like a pack of chittering hyenas, they sank their teeth into his belly, tearing at his flesh and turning the upstart textiles baron into a living, screaming charcuterie board. This story was compiled from the journals found in the vault of deceased media mogul Trenton Duval. Thank you so much for listening to the story of the Society of Culinary Mystics. I hope you enjoyed it. It was a little spooky. It was a little scary. But 'tis the season. It's October. We're ready for that kind of stuff. That's fun. That's fun. We all love it. Thank you to all the Patreon members who sent me suggestions that helped me write this story. Like I said, there is a secret podcast that is coming out alongside this podcast. So if you want to hear that, as well as all the other secret podcasts, go to my Patreon. That's patreon.com/littlevictorianboy. Donate some money to me, and you can listen to all those secret podcasts and make suggestions for future podcasts that we write here at the Little Victorian Boy podcast. And if you'd like to support me financially and don't want to join the Patreon, I understand. But maybe you want a personalized story from me, go to cameo.com and search for Little Victorian Boy, and you can order a personalized story from me as a gift to a friend, for yourself, a spouse, a lover, what have you. I'll make up a little story personalized to their taste, to them, and that helps keep me afloat as well. So please go to either Patreon or Cameo to help keep me running. And if you'd like to see more content from Little Victorian Boy, you can follow me on Instagram at Little Victorian Boy, TikTok at Little Victorian Boy, or YouTube.com/Little Victorian Boy, where I got a brand new YouTube with Charlie James, where we review Queen Elizabeth's most slutty outfits throughout history. So I hope that's fun and interesting to you. So go watch that when that comes out. Anyway, have a good one, and I'll see you later. Bye-bye.